Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Crispin Mokideo. It's great to have you with us.
Coming up, South Sudan's latest attempt to achieve peace fails yet again after President Salva Kiir rejects the idea of working with rebel leader Riek Machar, and this citizen is disappointed.
That statement is very disturbing, and as a citizen of this country, we believe that the two leaders can still work together. They can iron out all their differences.
And Nigeria's Super Eagles are playing in a do-or-die World Cup match against Iceland. We shall have more on that later on. Also in this program, Turkey is gearing up for a presidential election on Sunday, and the stakes couldn't be much higher.
After the failed coup attempt, the parliament declared state of emergency, which gives the executive enormous extraordinary powers.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But before we kick off, let's hear the other headlines from around the world.
I'm Eunice Njiro with DW News. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has downplayed expectations for this weekend's emergency EU summit on migration. Speaking on a visit to Lebanon, Merkel called emergency talks planned for the weekend an initial exchange that would not yield any joint statement or action on the issue. That's after Italy's populist government objected to a draft statement circulated by Brussels. This is what Italy's Interior Minister Matteo Salvini had to say.
In Europe, the times are over when France and Germany decided refugee policy, when they told Europe and Italy what they had to pay and which migrants they had to take in.
As Europe prepares for that migration summit, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has been continuing her two-day trip to the Middle East. After visiting Jordan, she went on to Lebanon, where she held talks with Prime Minister Saad al-Hariri. Lebanon has the highest number of refugees worldwide, according to the UNHCR, and Jordan ranks number two. The German Chancellor offered support to both countries to help their respective governments deal with the economic strain of hosting so many refugees. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. After dominating Turkish politics for 15 years, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan now faces a tough challenge as a more united and galvanized opposition tries to thwart his attempt to remain in office for five more years. Turkey will hold presidential and parliamentary elections on Sunday that are among the most important in its modern history. The winner of the presidential race will acquire sweeping new executive powers and a constitutional shakeup that Turkish voters narrowly approved in a referendum last year. If no candidate receives more than 50% of votes on June 24th, a runoff will be held on July 8th between the two best-performing candidates. Moving on, the latest attempt at ending South Sudan's five-year civil war failed on Friday as President Salva Kiir rejected working again with rival Riek Machar. This came after their first face-to-face meeting in almost 2 years in neighbouring Ethiopia. South Sudan offered to allow a rebel representative to join its government on Friday, but ruled out rebel leader Riek Machar. The country's information minister, Michael Makuei Lueth, said they had had enough of Machar.
This agreement, which we are revitalizing now, was imposed on us, and as a result, we have seen what happened in J1 in 2016. This came as a result of the two armies, and we are no longer as a government for the two armies. The opposition are for the two armies, and this is not acceptable. This is a red line to the government.
Despite that rejection, the minister said South Sudan's President Salva Kiir would meet his arch rival and former Vice President Machar for face-to-face talks again next week in Khartoum, capital of Sudan. And in World Cup action on Friday, Brazil sealed its first win in Russia with a 2-0 victory against Costa Rica. At halftime, Nigeria's Super Eagles are at 0-0 against Iceland, and Serbia will take on Switzerland later tonight. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mokideo.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Remember, we are also live on Facebook. Just visit our page, DW Africa, and comment on the stories we are airing. The latest attempt at ending South Sudan's five-year civil war has failed once again. This became apparent today when President Salva Kiir rejected the idea of his former deputy turned rival Riek Machar rejoining the government.
The two held their first face-to-face meeting in almost 2 years in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. Meanwhile, aid groups have warned that their humanitarian operations cannot continue to withstand South Sudan's civil war. Wake Simon Wudu is in Juba and he's been telling me the reaction from there.
Well, the reactions in Juba and across other parts of the world by South Sudanese is a bit disappointing because South Sudanese expected these two leaders at least to have compromised and come out at least with the agreement on some other areas in the proposed peace agreement by the regional leaders, IGAD, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development. Unfortunately, the meeting of the two failed to yield any output. Here are voices of Juba residents. I spoke to them today regarding the outcome of the meeting of President Kiir and Machar.
After the meeting yesterday, the summit, the IGAD summit, head of state summit, we heard the Minister of Information saying that the President is not ready to work with Machar anymore. And that statement is actually is very disturbing. And as a citizen of this country, we believe that the two leaders can still work together. They can iron out all their differences.
It is true they have been negotiating, the warring parties, but we have not seen the will of committing themselves to the interests of the people. Instead, they are negotiating for the position. Who is going to be first vice president? Who is going to be a member of parliament? Who is going to be a minister? For us as citizens, we want peace. We want stability.
The most important thing is the initiative of the president to come down and sit with the rebel leader. So I think there is a political will. Let them continue engaging in dialogue.
Right, those are the voices of Juba residents there. Now, Wake Simon, President Salva Kiir says he will meet Machar in Khartoum. What are the chances that this meeting will be fruitful this time?
You know, after the two leaders met yesterday, but one on Wednesday, Thursday yesterday, there was an IGAD Council of Ministers meeting. And one of the action points in that meeting is that the two leaders should continue to meet in first in Khartoum and then later on in Nairobi, Kenya, in 14 days' time. And they should continue to negotiate, reconcile, and at least work for peace and stability for South Sudan. So whether there will be anything big or not, it is unpredictable. But what is very important is that South Sudanese want these leaders to continue to meet and they talk.
Meanwhile, aid workers are saying that they cannot continue to work under the current conflict environment. What does that mean for those who depend on aid for their survival?
Literally, that means that is continuous suffering by the South Sudanese majority citizens who are, you know, depending on aid from aid agencies. It means food aid and other humanitarian aid services like drugs and even water in other areas and other services will not reach many, many people across the country.
DW correspondent Wake Simon Wudu speaking to me in Juba.
And of course, we asked a question on our Facebook page. What you think whether a rebel representative in a government can help bring back peace? Many comments come in crisping. To begin with, Marco Duck says, the statement from the government is nothing but another tactic to derail the peace process. How can you say you're ready for peace when you cannot accept your nemesis?
And Ibrahim Yusuf Ibrahim says, at least it can bring peace. Even Iran's government offered such to the Taliban.
Zawala Simeone says, DW Africa, let them organize a transitional government and eventually hand over South Sudan to a civilian government. These guys who are rebel leaders, all they believe in is the use of force. Very interesting there.
And Misongi Lawrence Silanda has a very interesting comment. He says, time is the only way. And I don't know how long they have to wait for
this
peace.
This is a story
to
that, of course, Crispin definitely will keep monitoring and always report on it whenever we can.
That's right. Now let's move on to the global stage. Turkish voters head to the polls this Sunday in what is seen as one of the most crucial elections in the country's modern history. Incumbent President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is facing a stiff challenge from Muharrem İnce, a combative former teacher who has revitalized the opposition in less than 2 months.
Now, Amnesty International has accused Erdogan's AKP government of cracking down on opponents and violating human rights of critics such as Amnesty Turkey's Honorary Chair Taner Kılıç. For more on Sunday's election, here's Marie Sina with this report.
The oligarchy, the Campaigns in Turkey have hit fever pitch as Turkish citizens prepare to cast their votes this Sunday in what observers say is one of the most important elections in Turkey's modern history. The day will also mark a fundamental transition in Turkish politics as constitutional changes are transforming the country's ruling system into an executive presidency. Yet, Serhat Güvenk, a professor at Kadir Has University in Istanbul, explains that the change has more or less already taken place.
In practical terms, the regime change has already been in place. After the failed coup attempt, the parliament declared state of emergency, which gives the executive enormous extraordinary powers. So the new regime will be a kind of, you know, legalization of this de facto use of authority.
Incumbent President Erdogan's decision to schedule the election 16 months earlier than planned caught his six contenders for the presidential vote off guard. Unlike in recent elections, however, opposition candidates and parties are mounting a serious challenge. Erdogan's main contender is Muharrem İnce, a former physics teacher who was nominated by the leading opposition party. Candidate Serhatin Demirtas, a pro-Kurdish human rights lawyer, has been campaigning via social media from jail, where he has been held for alleged terror charges since November 2016. Erdogan has come under repeated criticisms for his jailings of human rights activists. Rights group Amnesty International has described Erdogan's incarceration of Amnesty Turkey chair Taner as cruel and defying all logic. Erdogan, however, has made clear that he is not planning on changing his hardline policies as he continues his crackdown on terrorists and perceived enemies.
Where there is terror, where there is harassment against Turkey, we will go down on their neck.
That report was compiled by Marie Sina.
And Isaac, let's go back to our main story. That's the failure of the South Sudanese leaders to broker any peace deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the residents are obviously disappointed by that. And so many comments are still coming in. We have one from Leon Leg who says, give peace a chance.
And Muda Manka says his suggestion is to unite for the betterment of the people. Remember, Crispin, I mean, the rebel leader and former deputy, Riek Machar, will also travel to Khartoum on Sunday for another meeting with his rival. And, of course, many people are still skeptical, saying these leaders or rebel leaders, like men have been saying, have been meeting several times.
Well, that's true. I mean, there is also the element of the IGAD brokering. But again, as we heard from our correspondent in Juba, the issue, this issue is something that has been going on for a while, and the citizens are suffering. They're asking the leaders to put their self-interest aside and work for the peace and stability of the nation.
We have a comment here from Paul Eze who says, what makes them rebel and what causes them to pick up arms in the first place? I think that should be also a question to ponder.
A very good question for that. Senjo Emmanuel says, I think that giving the so-called rebels a chance in our government or power sharing will only be a cosmetic solution if it does not address the root cause of the problem. A proper problem analysis needs to be conducted to define the correct solutions to the conflict.
And of course, for Keba Jalo, he has sought divine intervention. He says, may Allah spread peace in Sudan and the wider world. Isha Allah Amin. I like that.
It's a prayer.
Yeah, it's a prayer.
Kelvin Obi says, that's a good move. We are all humans and should give peace a chance.
And Awhal Mohammed Made says, that will not bring peace. He's talking about the meetings, you know, that are scheduled later this week or on Sunday, unless they're trying to form a rebel government. This is a story that we've been covering, and of course, many people think that, you know, it's high time, like you mentioned, you know, especially the residents of Juba, they think the two really should come up and give peace a chance so that they can go back to the gardens and cultivate.
Well, that's true, and hopefully that they will be mature enough, not only in Khartoum, but they're also going to meet in Nairobi. So hopefully soon the suffering, you know, that we've always been reporting, we've also always been seeing, will come to an end, and hopefully soon.
Yeah, many thanks for those comments. Keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And as usual, we will always read your comments whenever we can.
You're listening to Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. You're also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Many thanks for the comments and keep the debate flowing on the topics that will be airing. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, she ruled Ethiopia more than 3,000 years ago and her legacy shaped the country's history to date.
የንግስተ ሳባ ታሪክ እንድም
What is significant about the story of the Queen of Sheba in Ethiopian context is first it illustrates as evidence that Ethiopia has a long history.
And in sports, the much-anticipated game between Nigeria's Super Eagles and Iceland is now underway. Scores now remain: Nigeria has one goal and Iceland nil. Now, for many fans, it has been a mix of joy and pain as their teams are either on the verge of being knocked out of the competition or have performed dismally. Egypt and Morocco, two of Africa's five representatives, were knocked out in the first week of competition. From Moscow, Samson Omale reports.
Senegal is still the only country from the five African representatives who have won their opening game, beating Poland 2-1. As the second round of matches gets underway, pressure is on Nigeria and Tunisia to avoid elimination. Super Eagles coach Gareth Rowe says Friday match against Iceland, which is ongoing, could be a difficult one.
We must be ready with a good organization against a different team from Iceland. It's different like Croatia. So we have also to adapt our organization on this different team we will play against. They do so well. They did so great match against Argentina. We know it will be very difficult to beat them. They are very good players. They are playing like a team.
Tunisian defender Johan Benaloue says his side remain confident that they can progress when they meet Belgium on Saturday.
We have to win. It's important for the head, it's important for the team, for the confidence, and for the result, because now we don't have any way. We have just one way: win for the qualification. They have amazing players like Hazard, like Lukaku, De Bruyne, obviously.
So far, Russia has put up an impressive tournament with no reported case of any glitch or security breach at any of the venues. Though this tournament is on the verge of becoming a World Cup with the highest number of own goals scored, big teams like the defending champion Germany continue to seek for their first wins, while Lionel Messi of Argentina could see his team exit from the tournament.
Samson Omale reporting in Moscow.
Now, Crispin, something interesting here that we've been following and, of course, are covering. A pastor in Nigeria, interestingly, was demanding over $2,000 from his followers to unleash a squadron of prayer warriors to grant the Super Eagles divine favor all through the tournament. Nigeria now is playing Friday, and like we mentioned, you know, the scores is 1-0 after that breakthrough from Musa on the 49th minute. Crispin, so it seems Nigeria will win the World Cup after all now. The pastor says, give me $2,000 and then I will unleash the squadron of warriors.
I don't know how many people have already given him the money. But in any case, we have comments from Charles E. Cloud, who just laughs and says, please leave Nigeria issues alone and focus on what is going on in the South Africa. We Africans are too religious. We should go and fix our match and stop predicting rubbish. Thank you.
Altosun Adedadisi says, let them bring the chickens to the match. That will work far better than this pastor's call for prayer warriors. The chicken represents a form of juju or traditional spirituality and is considered a good luck charm. These are comments from our Facebook users, Crispin. So, I mean,
Johnson N. Ose, he says, it's only a fool that will listen to him.
And Hassan Bendu says, in a nutshell, pastors are hustlers.
Aren't we all hustlers? And we move on now to Abuja, where ministers of defense from 28 countries within the Sahel region have been meeting to strategize on ways to tackle the influx of fighters from the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, into the continent.
The ministers are also expected to develop strategies to curb illegal movement of criminals across the regions and come up with solutions to security issues such as banditry, killer herdsmen, influx of small arms and crimes across border regions. A short while ago, I spoke to DW's Ben Shemang in Abuja on the significance of this summit.
The significance of this summit is in the fact that it is an attempt, a deliberate one, to ensure that terrorism is curtailed. It is also an attempt to ensure that small arms proliferation is also controlled. Apart from human trafficking, you recall the way Africans are crossing over the Saharan Desert through Libya going to Europe. So it's an attempt to check all of this. Apart from that, these are ministers of defense, and of course they also came with defense chiefs of various countries. They want to see how they can actually ensure that terrorism is not a kind of the culture they should have, bearing in mind that the desert, the Sahrawi areas are actually breeding grounds apart from northern Mali and the Sahelian region up to even Nigeria.
To what extent have remnants of the so-called Islamic State wreaked havoc in West Africa, and which groups in particular are they allied with?
Now, the Islamic group ISIS, in fact, they've had some contacts with the rebel groups or the terrorist groups in the Sahelian region. They are working in concert with Boko Haram. There is a faction led by Al-Barnawi. Al-Barnawi is the son of the founder of Boko Haram, Mohammed Yusuf. And of course, they've simply crowned him as the leader of Boko Haram, and they don't want to do with Shakau any longer. So the Nigerian authorities are not taking it kindly at all. And as we are talking, just yesterday, the state police, plain police in Nigeria, the SSS, State Security Service, they said they've arrested two members of ISIS in Abuja. So that tells you that these people are actually out to ensure that the spread of these people, of these terrorists, is being curtailed.
Now, in concrete terms, how much coordination has there been in the past, especially among countries in West Africa, to ensure that former IS fighters don't set up camp in Africa?
Isaac, I want to tell you that, you see, this association is called the Community of Sahel and Saharan States, and they comprise of countries of North Africa. Then you come to the Sahelian area, Mauritania, Senegal, Nigeria, Niger, Mali. So you even find Ghana and others coming in. So quite a lot of them are attended this. And the issue is that they want to actually tackle it head on. And that's why they have resolved to ensure that they preserve security and consolidate stability through good governance, avoidance of corruption and all that stuff. So they want to intensify bilateral, multilateral, and even sub-regional security to ensure that there is cooperation and Boko Haram or terrorists will be fought to a standstill.
I was speaking to Ben Chemang in Abuja.
DW, African Roots.
Yes, right, right indeed. Whenever you hear that opener, it's time to get back to the roots. History, the rich African history. Now, more than 3,000 years ago, the legendary Queen of Sheba reportedly paid a visit to Israel's King Solomon in Jerusalem. Written accounts of the encounter go back nearly as far in time, and they exist in numerous forms.
Appearing under different names, the queen is both a biblical and Quranic figure, and she's at the core of Ethiopian mythology. To many, she's a symbol of beauty, love, peace, and even an icon who strives to search for knowledge. But for Ethiopians, she's beyond everything. Here's her story.
...797 camels were loaded with spices, gold and precious goods. Countless mules and donkeys were also loaded, and the Queen of the South set out on her long and perilous journey to Jerusalem. The mighty and beautiful Queen of Sheba takes on a perilous journey through the desert in order to meet a king whose wisdom reverberates far beyond his own territory. The strength of the queen's encounter is only underlined by the fact that it is recounted in numerous traditions. Her names are many. The Queen of Sheba, as she is referenced in the Jewish Bible, appears as the Queen of South in the New Testament, Bilkis in the Quran, and Ethiopian writers call her Makeda in their oldest book known as Kebre Negast, Glory of the Kings. The Kebre Negast was published in the early 14th century. Drawing from the Old Testament, Arabic and Ethiopian sources, it gives the most detailed account of the Queen's meeting with King Solomon. Solomon invited her to his banquet and asked her to stay overnight in his palace. She asked him to swear that he would not touch her by force. He agreed and asked her not to touch anything from his house. The food she ate in the palace was very spicy, and she woke up thirsty in the middle of the night. She took a jar of water placed near her bed. Solomon appeared and told her that she broke her oath. After the queen quenched her thirst, they spent the night together. And the queen of Sheba bore Solomon a son called Manelik. According to Kebre Negast, he later visited his father in Israel. On his way home to Ethiopia, he took with him the Ark of the Covenant, a holy relic holding the Ten Commandments, starting a long tradition of Judaism in Ethiopia. The reign of King Menelik I marked the beginning of the Solomonic dynasty that spanned thousands of years of Ethiopian history. The Queen of Sheba remains important for Ethiopia, says Dr. Ayele Bekeri from the country's Mekelle University.
What is significant about the story of the Queen of Sheba in Ethiopian context is, first, it illustrates as evidence that Ethiopia has a long history. And second, this story is also one of the main pillars of our Ethiopian national mythology.
One thing is for sure, the Queen of Sheba's story won many hearts around the world.
People around the world are affected by this story, and that is why they express their appreciation in different ways, say in paintings, poetry, sculpture, or other means. This is because of the nature of the story. It's all about love, unity, friendship, and the thirst of knowledge. And these are what everyone seeks. The story simply draws a lot of attention.
When Emperor Haile Selassie was toppled in 1974, the 3,000 years of Solomonic dynasty in Ethiopia came to an end. However, the story of Queen of Sheba, or Makeda, is still alive today.
Eddie Micah Jr. with that story, which was written by Mante Gaftot Sileshi.
Now, Crispin, I think, of course, we have to go back to our interesting story, and it's a story that everyone is following, monitoring with so much enthusiasm. Wherever they are, you know, the African continent, you know, loves football, despite their performances that are not really doing well. So far now, many African teams are on their way. I should say they are starting to pack their bags. That is Egypt and Morocco. Now, the story is about the pastor who was demanding the $2,000 from his followers to unleash a squadron of warriors. Comments are still coming in, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
To help the Super Eagles so that they can lift the World Cup and bring it to the African continent.
Just to bring the listener to speed, the score is still 1-0. That is versus Iceland. It was scored on the 49th minute by Mosa. Chinyere Ezeifi has just written to us and says, inadequate preparation, inexperience, unfamiliar formation, individual talents, naivety, and confusion is behind the poor performance of Super Eagles in Russia. Well, Chinyere Ezeifi, at least you can have some hope that the score now stands at 1-0. Let's hope that your team will continue hold on the win, you know, or perhaps
that's
a bit
right.
Much better. Crispy.
A user that who calls himself Beza Bezbez just says, it's madness. We are not safe in this world. Even churches have been desecrated by the devil in sheep clothes. Believe some of these pastors and prophets at your own risk.
Ochiba says, all things are possible with God. He believes, you know, that with God everything is possible, Crispin. But he goes on to say, collecting money for prayers is a wrong step and a plot to seek relevance in the society.
And Isaac Gushen had a funny twitch to it. He says, please let us be serious as Christians and stop disturbing God. Please, I need that money, serious. Can someone let me have it for something important?
Ustaz Abdulis says, WhatsApp group, World Cup, Egypt has left. Group Morocco has left. Senegal recording audio. South Africa last seen 2010. Zimbabwe blocked.
Very interesting comment there.
Some people can be creative, Crispin.
They can indeed. Anyway, Adam says, if the pastor likes, he should step on the field himself. And let's see what happens.
Many thanks for those comments. On behalf of the production crew here behind the studios, Eliane Gelducci and Claudia Rack, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Crispin Mwakiteo.
Bye for now.